Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
'Cause I love you so much that the sound of your voice can get me high.
What kind of voice gets you high? A high-pitched wail or a throaty roar? This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and today on the show, we debate whether high or low voices make for better music. And later, Brazilian guitarist Carlos Barbosa Lima plays live. But first, earlier this month, a Soundcheck listener named Jody wrote to tell us about a conversation she'd had with her husband. Quote, "We got to discussing low singers, Teddy Pendergrass, Levi Stubbs, Eddie Vedder, Felix Cavalieri, versus high singers, Smokey Robinson, Eddie Kendricks, Art Garfunkel, Justin Timberlake. The smackdown between us was, who's better?" Unquote. Well, Jody, we're here to help you decide with this week's edition of
Soundcheck Smackdown.
Joining us today are Mark Anthony Neal, professor of black popular culture in the Department of African and African American Studies at Duke University. He's on the line with us from North Carolina. And with me in the studio is Jamie Lowe, author of the book Digging for Dirt, The Life and Death of ODB. Both of them are repeat offenders. So to both of you, Mark, Jamie, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
So, Mark, I mean, we're talking about high voices, low voices. Which has had, do you think, the bigger impact on pop music?
You know, I think whenever we hear particularly guys with high voices, you know, it there's all kind of speculation attached to those sounds. I think,
what
you
kind
know,
of deeper speculation? Can you expand on that, please?
I think there's a lot of speculation and scrutiny of men's voices that are too emotive, that particularly men who sing in falsettos. And I think, you know, with deeper voice male singers in particular, I think those questions aren't there. I think we want...
I think that those men are more secure with themselves. And they're willing to higher up the octave to express their emotions.
I'm not disagreeing with you. You know, I'm talking about the large... how the larger society responds to a lot of this stuff. So I agree with you. I think we like particularly our male singers to be as traditional as possible, and I think those deep baritone voices do that for us. I think it's important to think about, you know, these deep voice singers. I mean, the way they resonate in music that, A, is political, and also music that is, you know, highly charged sexually and also in terms of romance, because it's a very traditional performance of masculinity.
Well, that's funny, though, because opera... You spoke about traditional, and opera is like one of the most traditional music forms, genres that I can think of, and that's almost much more tenor-based. I mean, you have the three tenors.
Yeah.
You don't have the three baritones.
The tenor is the one who always gets the girl. It's
yeah,
the baritone
the
who's
romance.
The creepy uncle or the evil police chief or whatever it
they're
is.
They're swooning, and they're out there, and their emotions are on their sleeve. I mean, it's like real. You're talking about, I feel like you're talking about the seductive element, like the deep voices are, they're kind of trying to woo someone in a not particularly kosher way, necessarily.
Yeah, but I think when you think about opera,
it's
though,
sexual.
I think
like the baritone is highly charged sexually.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
Well, what
okay.
What's not kosher about that?
It's kosher. I think that there's an earnest attachment to what to like a higher voice, like Simon and Garfunkel, or like Justin Timberlake.
You
have this sort of, you know, what goes around comes around is this song where you're feeling his heartbreak. He's been cheated on. He's just destroyed. And if he did that in this low, seductive voice, would you really buy it?
Right, right.
There's an honesty to it in some ways.
What about, Mark, I mean, the low voices certainly have had a huge impact on pop culture. And, you know, if you think of somebody like Elvis Presley, you know, I mean, whatever he might have done, you know, in terms of the larger musical world of, you know, appropriating black music, bringing it to a white audience. I mean, just the sound of his voice, that influenced a generation of singers, didn't it?
Oh, I think absolutely. You know, it's a voice of a sound of respect, you know, something that a voice that you have to pay attention to. I mean, I think about a figure like Chuck D in hip hop. You know, I think conscious rap, you know, for instance, develops very differently, you know, if Chuck D isn't the voice of conscious rap, or it is the voice that kind of demanded you to pay attention to it. I think Elvis had that same impact, you know, in the late 1950s in that regard.
Here's the voice of a generation. This is the low voice of a generation. It is, of course, Elvis.
Do you miss me tonight? Are you sorry we drifted apart? Does your memory stray to a bright summer day when I kissed you and called you sweetheart? Do the chairs in your parlor
seem... Elvis Presley, Are You Lonesome Tonight? Mark Anthony Neal is defending the low voices in our Soundcheck Smackdown debate today. Jamie Lowe, the high voices. Although, Jamie, come on, if Elvis was singing that in falsetto, would you feel it the same way?
I'm not sure I feel it this way necessarily. Like, not to completely not be attached to Elvis, but I'm not really. I mean, like, I think the Chuck D, Flava Flav example.
An interesting comparison that I do want to come back to later. But if Elvis was the voice of a generation for the low voices, right, what about Michael Jackson for a generation of high singers?
Absolutely. I mean, I kind of feel like him trying to preserve the sense of a high voice really was mentally sort of disruptive for his long-term life, because it was like trying to hold on to this childhood and this innocence and this adorable little tiny boy of the Jackson 5 who represented everything for the family. And if anything, that sort of preservation of the voice was really difficult to watch. But, I mean, Rock With You is not a song without his voice on it. And it's like this beautiful tune. And, it's... Every time you hear it, you want to kind of shake your head and wish you were wearing bell bottoms and like feel some happy around you. And if it were baritone, it's something else completely. If it were like a deep voice, it's a sultry thing. It's not this kind of like innocent, light feeling. And I think that there is that element to music.
Yeah. And I think there's a historical context.
Michael Jackson, Rock With You. Jamie, I'm not sure I buy the whole bit about wanting to be in bell bottoms while I listen to this, but as you were saying, to you, the song and the high voice, inseparable. Mark, what about, the idea that you started off with today, that that still in the wider culture, hearing a male singer in an upper register like that causes a certain kind of... confusion, perhaps? Can you expand on that a little bit?
You know, one of my favorite singers, is a 1970s soul singer named Ronnie Dyson. He was in early performances of Hair, and he has this incredibly high-pitched voice, very emotive. But, when you listen to him sing, it's the thing that makes him so great. It's like as if you're hearing him sing as a woman. And I think audiences are very uncomfortable with that, because there are all kinds of other implications that we attach to the sound of men's voices and what we think about sexuality. I think the Elvis Presley, Michael Jackson comparison is interesting. Elvis Presley could be the voice of the 1950s in a way that Johnny Mathis couldn't in that same era. Michael Jackson makes sense at the end of the 1970s because, we've gone through 5-6 years of disco, and suddenly sexuality, for instance, is out front in the open in a way that it had never been before. So Michael Jackson almost makes sense in that regard. Of course, hip-hop in the 1980s, as some folks have argued, brings the bass back, to pop music.
So what is, let's also give our listeners a chance to get in on this conversation. We want to know what floats your boat, high voice, low voice? You can give us a call at 212-433-9692. That's 433-WNYC. Or leave a comment on the Soundcheck page. It's wnyc.org/soundcheck. So, Mark, I know there are scientific studies that, kind of suggest that lower-voiced males have historically had, you know, kind of an advantage in, let's call it reproduction, because this is a family program. But really, what is sexy about a low voice? What does it signify?
You know, I think in a very traditional sense of the word, it's like masculinity, right? There's no question that this is a man. You know, Teddy Pendergrass's voice, you know, who kind of defined male soul singing in the 1970s because of that deep register and that full beard of his, you know, there were no questions about his masculinity, right? There was a comfort zone there for many people, you know, in comparison to, say, a Sylvester, you know, from that era, or even an Al Green, you know, that, you know, you understood who Teddy Pendergrass was.
So then, Mark, wouldn't it be even more of an accomplishment if you had a high voice and were incredibly seductive in your music, like Prince?
I mean, I think folks think of Prince as a freak.
But they buy his albums and they like him. People, I love Prince. People love Prince.
All right, by general acclaim, a best-selling freak named Prince.
I would never not love the song because someone was a freak.
Well, now, wait.
You wouldn't have any
now,
songs.
I have a follow-up question about Kiss by Prince.
Yes.
You know, undeniable, the guy's a huge star, had some success with this song, high falsetto voice. Then Tom Jones comes along, deep voice, has a huge hit with the same song. So is it the singer, Jamie, or is it the song?
I would say it's both. I mean, both were successes, and they're different kinds of success. And I would say, like, the very best voices of the world are both, can manipulate both high and low.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the songs, you know, you can use high voices to complement low ones, and there's so much hip-hop that's really effective in that way, like Farside, or where you have both elements. But no one's ever been castrated for a low voice. That's sacrifice.
We're talking about the difference between high and low voices, their impact, their importance in music making, and we've got some calls on the line and comments coming in on the Soundcheck page, and as he often does, our producer Joel Meyer is moderating the comments. What you got, Joel?
John, there is a meta SmackDown going on the Soundcheck page, a SmackDown about the SmackDown. James from the Upper West Side, Connie from New Jersey, Ron from the Upper East Side, all concerned that Soundcheck is running out of ideas for the Soundcheck SmackDown. But however, the question of Prince's freakiness could be on the docket for a future episode. We are getting a lot of people who really are fans of both kinds of voices and singers who can sing on both sides of the aisle, so to speak. LG from Houston mentions Roy Orbison. LG writes, the man could sing it all, high and low. And Jenny from New York City writes two words, Robert Plant. The higher voice can be extremely sexual and hot. Actually, wait, he's kind of done both. Does he get his own category? And BK from New York is very definitive. No contest, low equals sexy.
Okay. We've so far been talking about high and low as if that's the exclusive province of the male voice.
Right.
But the same question comes into play with female voices. Or does it, Mark? Is it a different thing?
No, I think there's some other different elements to it. I mean, Nina Simone, you know, there's a kind of gravity to her music because, you know, she's singing in a deeper register, particularly the stuff that she's doing to the civil rights movement. You know, again, I think it forces listeners to take it even more seriously than the lyrics suggested, you know, because it is a sound of authority, you know, in that context.
What about female folk singers? I mean, I feel like there's a lot of political songs that are higher.
No, I get you, but I think we're talking different genres also. I think we're talking different genres and different audiences in that regard.
What about someone like Carmen McRae? I mean, you know, that kind of husky sound, you know, what does that add to her singing?
I think it does the same thing in terms of seriousness. I mean, you know, you listen to Carmen McRae because she was a great singer. You didn't care what dress she was wearing. You didn't care how pretty she was. You know, she was a jazz singer, and because her voice was in that deeper register, I think folks, you know, gave her a listening as opposed to simply wanting to see what she looked like, you know, as, you know, many, you know, female singers from the era may have had to deal with.
I've been here before. More often than I choose to tell, and though the view's been twice as clear before, by now I know it pretty well. Those telltale you try to let go by.
Carmen McRae, I have a feeling. And I guess there are lots of people who had a feeling listening to Carmen McRae sing with that throaty alto of hers. And today on our Soundcheck Smackdown, we are debating the highs and lows, the highlights and lowlights of the vocal range. We have calls and comments coming up right after the break. And then later on the show, the classical guitarist Carlos Barbosa Lima has just released his 50th album. He'll play some live music for us here in our Soundcheck studio.
Check out today's Soundcheck blog.
Without getting into all the physics of sound waves and stuff, lower voices are simply better. Plus, every guy knows that a girl with a husky voice, even a girl just getting over a cold, sounds undeniably, scientifically sexier.
For the rest of the story, visit the Soundcheck page at WNYC.org.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. The voice of Public Enemy frontman Chuck D is synonymous with conscious hip-hop. But what if, instead of his trademark low bellow, he had a high reedy voice like his collaborator Flavor Flav? Would songs like this one, Fight the Power, have had the same impact? We're talking today about whether high or low voices make for better music. And joining us on the line from North Carolina is Mark Anthony Neal, professor of Black popular culture in the Department of African and African American Studies at Duke University. And with me in the studio is Jamie Lowe, author of the book Digging for Dirt, The Life and Death of ODB. I did promise, Jamie, I would come back to you mentioned the Chuck D, Flava Flav thing before. Same band. They had both. They had the high voice. They had the low voice.
Kind of like a trick. I mean, they would have, if Chuck D wasn't, if it was Flava Flav who was, you know, rapping, then Chuck D would have complimented in another way. And it is more impactful because it's Chuck D and it's his voice. And I do feel like there's some kind of gravity and like seriousness to it.
So was Flava Flav for like comic relief?
I think a little bit. I think it was a compliment. I think it's like you hear things in layers, and that if it was, you know, sometimes when you listen to a lot of Leonard Cohen, it's a little thick. There's like a little too much going on.
But
like,
you know what,
oh,
though? But
I mean,
early Leonard Cohen, he sounds like Arlo Guthrie.
Right,
singing through his nose, is very high.
Tom Waits' first album is like a nice folk normal. Like, you would never know it was his voice. Closing Time is a very presentable, like, normal. You don't think that he has dipped his throat in acid, which is, you know, it makes his voice defines him. But that's it. That's the voice, like, carries more than the weight of the music or the weight of the lyrics or, you know, Simon and Garfunkel were both. It was like a higher voice on top of a high voice.
Yeah, yeah.
And they, you know, dominated people's, you know, consciousness in a way that was, like, it was accessible and you heard the words and the content.
That's an interesting point. Mark, Simon and Garfunkel, the combination of high and higher, do we have a, can you fight fire with fire? Do you have a low and lower combination that works?
I can't really think of one that works in that regard.
Yeah, yeah. Is there something about a higher voice that is better, that is more intelligible, maybe?
I mean, I think in terms of the delivery of lyrics and enunciation, I think, yeah, we very much expect, you know, high voice singers, whether they're male or female, to be able to enunciate lyrics, to be much more lyrical in their singing in that regard. I think that, you know, part of what's so appealing to deep voice singers is not so much what they're singing, but just the sound of their voice.
Right, right.
But I think that's true with high voices, too. I mean, a lot of times in like James Murphy of LCD Sound System, and even Mariah Carey, their voices are almost like instruments that complement the production. Mm-hmm. And they're sort of, it's more of like a piece of thread woven into the tapestry. Their vocals are, you know, another instrument.
Let's see which instruments some of our listeners have been listening to. Maria's joining us from Queens, and Doug's on the line with us from Brooklyn. Maria, are you a fan of the high end of things?
Well, yeah, when it comes to Prince, I mean, how would Adore sound if it was any other way but the way that he sings it? And then you also have D'Angelo, you have Maxwell, mm-hmm. you have now even the big guy on the American Idol, Michael Lynch. And look how big he is, and he goes all the way to the very high, to the very low. But just imagine, listen to Adore one time, and imagine how that would sound if it was in a low voice. Not too great.
Doug, what about you? You feel the same way about the high voices?
I think there's a complexity to Neil Young's work, his voice, where that is amazing. That I love low voices. I love Gangstar, and just incredible. There are incredible low voices that get me also, but there's a complexity to a high voice, especially a male high voice, that is, I don't know, for some reason it goes right through me.
In a good way, you mean?
Right.
So when Neil Young goes up into his falsetto, that works for Doug. Stuart from Seacrest joining us. What about you? Do you go for the higher end of things, or do you have a different point of view?
I more of a broad range, I guess, but I feel the low end, and my case for females with low voice would be Cher and Toni Braxton. I think their voices are great. I guess that's what you would call sultry.
Mm-hmm.
And for music, anyway. I don't know. As far as like my current paramour, her voice is on the higher range, and it does fine for me.
And is she a singer? This current
good.
Paramour of yours?
What's that?
Is she a singer?
No, she's not actually. Actually, no, she can sing actually. But, she doesn't that much. But,
all right, but before we get too much into Stuart's personal life on the air, it's funny how the conversation continually, when we talk about high and low, Mark, Jamie, it comes back to sex, right? And is it, you know, do we still have this kind of disconnect when hearing voices that are very high? I mean, your Minnie Riperton high, even for a woman, that's like, it's almost, it's like beyond physical. It seems to be up in the atmosphere somewhere. Can you take away the body? Can you take away that physicality from the voice? And if you do, what happens?
I think that's what makes it such an odd experience for many people, particularly listening to that hybrid. I mean, it's like they're disembodied. It's as if they're no longer human on some level. And I think on the one hand, that's what's attractive to really high voice singers, but it's also, I think, what makes us, you know, a little disconcerted, you know, when we hear them, or even when it's coming from a female singer.
Okay. Joel Meyer, back in the control room, you got some more comments for us?
John, you know, when it comes to sex, you really cannot disassociate it with the voice. Here's what Linda from the Lower East Side wrote. I associate those low voices with love 'em and leave 'em with a baby, guys.
Uh-huh.
Linda
absolutely,
writes,
Linda.
Linda writes, my ears went up when Jamie Lowe said high voices were more sincere sounding. Max from Manhattan writes, in musical theater, there's been a recent trend towards the middle register with the term baritenor. I find that most of that music, which can be incredibly powerful, finds itself in a medium sweet spot. Now, Tonky from Red Hook uses what I like to call the nuclear option and mentions castrati singers in opera. You can read more about that on the Soundcheck page if you'd like. And the SmackDown about our SmackDown continues with Gary from the Upper Left Side offering up a new idea for a new SmackDown, which is Fender electric guitars versus Gibson electric guitars.
Gibson. Definitely Gibson.
No comment.
I don't know.
It's Gibson Les Paul, the class, the Black Beauty, 1950. You're done. All right. So, well, I mean, this SmackDown came from a listener, so maybe we'll take Gary's idea up with a couple of other musical gladiators in the upcoming weeks. But for the moment, we're talking about voices, high and low. Walter is with us on the line from New Jersey. Walter, I understand you're a singer yourself.
Yes, I sing in a chorus, and I've sung for many years.
Do you sing high or low?
I used to be high, and then one day when I switched to another chorus, they put me in a low end, and I tried it, and sure enough, my voice kind of expanded, and I was able to sing low. So now I'm really confused. I don't know where I'm singing high or low.
Which do you like better?
Which do I like? I probably feel more comfortable voice in the low, but I find that at least half of the basses can also sing tenor. All the good singers can sing both ranges, but tenors can't sing bass. No
Walter, who's getting the girls in this choir?
well, most of us are married.
All right, so are you looking to us for advice on whether to sing high or low?
Yeah, that's my conflict.
All right, Mark, you want to advise poor Walter here, who doesn't know whether to sing high or low?
You know, I think if he sings high, it always makes him a special person within the context of the choir.
All right, so you get a little advice from Mark taking Jamie's side of the argument for just a moment there. Ray is on the line with us from Larchmont. And Ray, are you a singer too?
No.
All right.
All.
But if you're a listener, which do you prefer listening to?
I'd like to just ask Mark a quick question. Mark, I'm guessing, were you born after 1975?
I was not. I was born in 1965.
Okay, we were born the same year. I was just going to tell you that when I grew up in the 70s, people definitely seemed to think that Teddy Pendergrass had a somewhat feminine side to him.
Hmm.
Oh, that's interesting. Was it the tight pants and the open shirts?
I think he just had that ridiculously pretty, you know, he was a lot of things, but he had that very, very pretty kind of manicured look, you know?
Yeah, I got you.
So, anyway, but the thing I wanted to say, I think Jamie touched on something good before. My favorites are the ones who can do both, Chaka Khan, Roger Daltrey, Mick Jagger. Listen to Mick Jagger on Miss You. You know, he does a great falsetto, but he's got the baritone rest of it, and I think the ultimate is actually Roger Daltrey on the Who Are You album. If you listen to him on there's a song called Love Is Coming Down, he sounds like an angel. And then everybody should go on YouTube and listen to the Who Are You vocal isolated, which you can find, And he just sounds like a steamroller on that. It sounds like no one could ever sing again after that.
Well, you know, that someone else mentioned in one of the comments, Robert Plant. I mean, the sort of the classic, the rock god was mm-hmm. someone who could bellow and who could also go up there and grab those high notes. And you mentioned Mick Jagger and Beast of Burden. Mm-hmm. Much of that song is in the high register, although for my money, it's when he drops finally down into his regular voice
it's
that
the contrast.
That the
I mean,
song
you
hits
see
its
both
emotional.
Sides.
Yeah.
You want to see what's underneath and what's on top. And
let's get a few final comments in. Joel Meyer in the control room moderating the comments page, wnyc.org/soundcheck. Joel?
John, we're going to give the last word to someone who shows up on our comments page pretty often. Cynthia from Long Island goes for deep voices. She writes, I hate to choose, but if I have to, I'll go with the low voice being more satisfying, especially with Mariah Carey being the example for the high side. Her voice practically turns into a dog whistle. What's satisfying about that?
Talk about the nuclear option. All right, Mark Anthony Neal, defender of low voices everywhere. He's professor of black popular culture at Duke University's Department of African and African American Studies. And Jamie Lowe, defending the upper register. She's the author of the book Digging for Dirt, The Life and Death of ODB. Mark, Jamie, thank you both for being with us
thank
for
you.
A very silly soundcheck smackdown. Fantasy from Mariah Carey. And still to come, Carlos Barbosa Lima. He once studied classical guitar with the great Andres Segovia. Now he's releasing his 50th, yes, 5-0 record. He'll play live next. Join Soundcheck this spring for live broadcasts from WNYC's Green Space. Find out how you can be in the audience during performances by Moby, The National, and The Hold Steady. It's all on the Soundcheck page at wnyc.org/soundcheck.